that's the biggest thing we can ask our non-Indigenous allies and accomplices to do, is to use their power in that way by giving power to those communities through language and through interaction.
Hi everyone, Jess here. I have exciting news for all of you. We have our very first guest joining us for this special episode of 10 Minutes to Change. Today we are going to be covering the topic of land acknowledgements. It occurred to me after recording our introductory episode that not everyone might know what a land acknowledgement is and why we each included one in our introductions. Quite frankly, I wasn't even sure if I had done mine right. Well, a serendipitous Instagram suggestion introduced me to Corinne Rice Greycloud around that same time, and I immediately knew I wanted to talk to her and learn more from her. Corinne is a writer, consultant, and educator who provides incredible lessons on her Instagram page about topics like missing and murdered Indigenous women, residential schools, sage and smudging, the land back movement, Indigenous Peoples Day, and blood quantum. Corinne is tremendously generous with her knowledge, and I am so honored to have her on as our first guest. So please join us as Corinne guides us through how to respectfully put together a land acknowledgement and how to ensure it's not just a performative action. Near the end, you'll hear a few questions come in from the rest of the team as well, and the conversation expands to touch on what else we can do to further reconciliation with the Indigenous people whose land we live on. I got so much more out of this conversation than I could have ever imagined. It was really special for all of us to be a part of. So with that, I hope you enjoy. Hi, Corinne. Thank you so much for joining us today. I'd love to start by having you introduce yourself to our listeners.
My name is Corinne Rice Greycloud, and I am Mohawk and Lakota. And I live on the Rosebud Reservation in South Dakota in the United States. And I'm a journalist for powwows.com and have been since 2014. And now I educate nationwide on Indigenous issues. And I have two kids, Hunter and Emma, and my partners, Greg Greycloud. And we have a little horse ranch and a cat named Shichala, and I'm just so happy that you asked me to be here.
I am so happy you agreed to join us and so excited to discuss land acknowledgements with you. Why don't we jump right into it? Could you tell us what a land acknowledgement is and its significance?
Yeah, absolutely. So a land acknowledgement is when an entity or a company or an organization or a place will begin an event or a dinner or any kind of community activity where there are a lot of people there, or even a small activity, by stating publicly that that they recognize that the land that they're on is not their own, and that that they play a role in benefiting from its acquisition. So it is a way to voice out loud a recognition of that this land is traditionally of a different people. And it's important, but we can go into more depth in a little bit about what needs to accompany that, right?
So yes, I would love to get into that. What components would or should a land acknowledgement contain?
Well, the land acknowledgement itself is really just a statement, right? Mm-hmm. So the statement is going to say, we, whatever your entity is or your company or your organization, acknowledge that we are speaking on, insert tribal nation here, right? Land, and that that was taken without their permission, and that we continue to benefit from that acquisition. And that we ask, and usually, I mean, you don't have to include this, but I like hearing a land acknowledgement that asks permission, asks for consent to continue, even if the ancestors cannot answer back audibly. we're still asking permission. We're asking for that consent to be in that space at that time. And sometimes if you had the tribal nation as part of that event, if they were there for whatever reason, it depends on what event you're having. I would hope that they would be involved. You're asking their consent to be there with them there, right? And that's important because that's putting the authority where it belongs with the caretakers of that land.
Right.
So that's kind of just a very basic structure for your land acknowledgement, but you're going to want to state your organization's name, that you're acknowledging as an organization, that you're using and occupying land that is not yours, stating whose it is and who the caretakers are, and then also asking for consent to be there and to participate and move forward with the activity that you're doing. You could call it a blessing. You could call it just to have consent or permission. It would be up to you and the community that you work with in crafting it. And I want to make it clear that land acknowledgements really shouldn't be created on your own. They should always be created in partnership with the community, the tribal nation that you're, whose land you're on.
Yeah, I would love to get into that with you. How would you suggest incorporating all the tribal nations of the land that you're on?
Well, you can reach out to the band office, right? To the council and ask their, they'll have secretaries and people in their office that you can ask and say, you know, this is who we are, this is what we want to do. And I would also include at this time probably that it's important that it's not just an acknowledgement, right? That you're involving this community, expressing to them. Because if you call up me and say, hey, I want to make a land acknowledgement, I'm always going to be hesitant and be like, okay, and? And what else? What else do you want to include the community in doing with you? Because it's a commitment. Your land acknowledgement is a commitment. It's a promise to the people whose land you're on. And it's unless you want to be performative, which I don't think you do, right? I don't think people want to be performative. I think they want to be sincere. So what you're building with that land acknowledgement is you're building a relationship with those Indigenous people. You're involving them. You're assigning them the role of the caretaker of that land. And so you're going to seek them and their guidance with what you do. So when you reach out to this office and you're going to say, you know, we're crafting this land acknowledgement and we'd like you to be involved as much as you want to be. We'd like your input. If you have an elder who'd like to be there to do a blessing after we do a land acknowledgement or before, that's another thing you can ask or speak on. And then also to reiterate your commitment to that nation at that point. We commit to, you know, helping with youth programs, or we would like to offer our services in any way that you as a sovereign nation deem that you would like to designate help towards, right? Mm-hmm. Whether that's monetary, you know, whether you're going to give money or whether you're going to give your services, if you're asking a sovereign nation to make a sovereign nation's decision, we don't want to attach strings to the assistance that we offer, right? So we'll say, I'd like to give $500 and then $100 every time we use this land acknowledgement, if you'll help us create this land acknowledgement, then let them use it however they want. So I would always tell people, don't say, I'm going to give you $500 for, you just took away their sovereignty in that moment. You know, you need to let them decide how they will use the funds that you give them. Otherwise, it's really like, what do you want? Like a grant? A report, you know, like, do you want people to fill out, this is how we used your money? And that's not really mm-hmm. what we're aiming for in that relationship building, right?
Yeah, that makes sense. I love that piece about asking for consent. I think that's something I've never heard that in a land acknowledgement at the events that I've been at. I think that's such a great step and something that's definitely missing in a lot that I've heard.
Yeah. And I think that you have to remember is there's a risk to accepting that it's an offer, it's an exchange, and when you need consent, because they may say no, mm-hmm. you cannot be here for this event on our land today. And I mean, if you are not in a relationship with them and speaking with them, communicating with them through the process, they may very well, when you ask for consent to be there, say no. But if if you're working towards this in a good way, and you're bringing respectful gifts to your interactions with these tribal nations, but you show up to speak with them for the first time instead of a phone call, maybe you show up to the office and you just want your first interaction to be, hello, this is who I am, nice to meet you, and then you bring them tobacco, right? Usually in Indian country, it tends to be that we'll gift tobacco and coffee. Right. So maybe the first interaction you have before you even talk about land acknowledgements, just an introduction of who you are because you're on their land. Maybe that's what that is. Hello, nice to meet you. My name is Jessica and I'm with Sierra Youth, and this is what we are doing. And we'd like to gift you some tobacco and coffee and say who we are and just be in this space together. Oh my God. As a Native woman, if some young woman showed up with that, I think I might cry, really, because, it's traditional, it's respectful, it's what I'm learning to do with my elders here in my community in Rosebud here where we're living. You know, we're getting ready for a wedding and we want to go ask Chief Hollow Horn Bear to marry my fiance and I, and so we're preparing to bring a braid of sweetgrass, coffee, and tobacco when we go to his home, and we will ask him in person, will you marry us for our ceremony? And that's just, that's almost an art.
That's right? So beautiful.
It's just almost this thing that is on the cusp of disappearing, right? In our technologically mm-hmm. advanced world, it is so impactful. When you take a step away from technology and go in person and show up and have this gift in that moment. And I tell you, the elders would probably be very, taken aback probably, because that would be something different, but it would stick with them because it shows your willingness to learn what is culturally appropriate and acceptable in this community that you're building a relationship with. So.
I love that step. I think it's, at the events that I've been to, I would say it's highly doubtful that people had any sort of interaction like that or looked for advice in crafting their land acknowledgements. I think it makes it a bit hollow in that regard. I mean, the whole point mm-hmm. to me feels like you're acknowledging that this isn't your land, and how sad is it if you're saying that while not having relationships with the people whose land it is?
Right. Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. And it's a step in repairing that relationship. I mean, you guys are a new generation of people that have the opportunity to do things in so much of a better way than, say, the boomer generation, right? Where you're going to come in and you have this deeper... When I look at youth, the youth today, Gen Z or whatever you want to call yourselves, I'll look at that generation of youth and it's so fantastic because you have this deeper empathy for things and for people than I think any other generation has. You're so self-aware and informed in a way that maybe that other generations haven't been. And I think that is a step forward. And I think that's a step in repairing some of that harm that was caused by not even your generation, by the generations ahead of you. But here you are left with trying to fix so much of that damage and so many of those relationships. And the fact that you guys are even asking about having an Indigenous woman come on to talk about these kind of things is just... You know, it's great. It's the perfect way to handle what you're handling.
Well, we are so happy to have you.
Thanks.
Yeah, I would love to here, because you've been consulting and writing and educating, how have you seen that landscape change? I know in my research, I found the City of Toronto website has a land acknowledgement, and even they say that they've only been doing that since 2014, so not that long. I'm curious how you've seen that change.
Yeah, land acknowledgements are fairly new. You know, I mean, I would say probably around 2014 is really when I started hearing about them. And even then, it was just like, I remember hearing about them first and being like, why? Like, what is the point of saying, hey, we're on stolen land, but we're not going to do anything about it. Everybody enjoy the show. Like, it just didn't make sense to me. And so that was at the very beginning of my, you know, discovering how I would end up feeling about that topic. But I think because my platforms of education are so wide and the demographic of my followers is also so vast, I get everything. I mean, and it's hard to tell where growth is, except for what I have noticed is those who are more open to growth are the younger generation. It's harder to get through to the older generation. Like my gen, I'm 34. So my generation and up, okay, it's because so many in our generation lack the skills of self-reflection and being able to remove our ego from what we're hearing. It's just, I don't know what it is about our generation, and maybe it's because of who raised us or whatever you want to call it as, but I am definitely seeing a trend in the younger generation of my followers and being more open to hearing about different experiences. Now that I'm thinking about it out loud, it's probably also because you guys have been exposed to and given windows into other people's lives, styles, and cultural experiences more so than any other generation because of things like social media, right? You have Instagram and you have TikTok and you have, you know, Facebook, where you can really see, you get this little peek, this little window into other cultures, other lifestyles, other experiences, other traumas that it was harder to gain access to in generations before social media. So I think I definitely see that that's the youth that are more in tuned to self-reflection and removing ego from what you're learning.
That gives me hope.
Me too.
Hope is good.
Yeah.
Beyond land acknowledgements, what can we be doing for reconciliation?
I think the most impactful thing you can do is to speak about sovereign nations with language that is inherent to sovereign nations. Because when we speak, if I were to speak about something as if it were truth, and I do it enough times, then it becomes truth, right? And that's how it's been throughout all of history. We create the history with the words that we use, and we speak them as fact. So if you start using language when you refer to a tribal nation and with the respect of a sovereign nation, right, that these people are, you treat them with the same respect in your language that you use, and and I'm talking to other, you know, I call them European Americans, but you're in Canada. So to other non-Indigenous folks, if you're using verbiage that shows your respect for that sovereign nation, that they're a sovereign nation and a sovereign entity, then they're going to start being comfortable hearing that truth. They're going to be comfortable with language associated to an Indigenous nation that reflects their sovereignty and reflects their self-governance. And when that happens, then they have more power as a sovereign nation because they're already getting respected that way. There's a legal term for that. My brother uses it before, but I'm not even going to try to remember what it's called. But it's basically, that's what it is if you refer to something enough times in our language, using the language that we have, and refer to sovereign nations as sovereign in enough ways that we are showing them respect with our words, then the communities we are speaking to will view them that way. And that's the biggest thing we can ask our non-Indigenous allies and accomplices to do, is to use their power in that way by giving power to those communities through language and through interaction. If you are telling, you know, let's say it's a theater wants to have a land acknowledgement. If you're telling that theater, you know, this is fine, but we're going to definitely have to ask for consent from that tribal nation first. And you do that with ease in your language. It just comes out. You're going to, oh, that's a great idea. Let's run that by the tribal council and see how they feel. If you do that in enough interactions, then that's going to be second nature to them, because they're going to be like, oh, right, because this is their land. So we should include them on every major decision we're making on their land. You know what I mean?
Yeah, whether it's so,
like,
sense.
Let's say they wanted to dig up a new parking lot. Oh, we should definitely run that by this tribal nation to make sure this is not like a burial site. Maybe this was traditionally used for ceremony. We should probably run this, you know, just even that interaction enough times, that committee or whoever that those people are in that space will respect the fact that they need to be consulted, brought in, you know.
Mm-hmm. I think that language creates such a mindset shift, the yeah. continuation of that. That makes so much sense to me.
Mm-hmm. And it's new, right? It'll take a while in a lot of cases. That's called neuroplasticity. You're literally going to be rewiring their brains to think differently. And that takes time. That takes time and practice, consistency, and all that. But do it enough times, and that will definitely change thought processes.
Yeah. Unlearning and relearning.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I like that a lot. I would love to talk about your other work. I know the land acknowledgements was how I first came across all that you do, but you provide lessons on so many topics and consulting and writing, and I would love to hear more about that as well.
Yeah. I mean, what do you want to know? It's just, you know, I do a lot, but it's all of that is supplemental education. These are things that you guys all should have been learning about in school and as part of just regular life. I mean, I feel like I said this the other day, but like if I go to France, then I expect to learn French and I expect to be educated on French culture.
Yes.
So, but that's not the case in Canada or in the US, right? You learn about colonial culture and you learn about colonial expectations and of non-Canadian, like non-Canadian culture, not the Indigenous cultures to where you are at. You're learning about other things. And so it's just very different. It's very odd to me, and I find myself in my educational pieces or in my consultation work or my writing being that supplemental education for many people. And I'm talking adults in large corporations with a whole bunch of power. Think places like Google and Facebook and Walmart and like big places. And here I am explaining to people that I'm still here. And that's a problem because they're making decisions on my land, in my country, in my ancestral home that affect me directly. And so seeing that this is a need, understanding that this is a deficiency in Canada and in the US, you know, I like to offer that support so that the elders and the people in my community don't have to do it all the time. They can send people to my page or they can ask me to speak on something because maybe they don't have the words for it. Maybe they don't know exactly how they want to voice what they're feeling, and then but I've already figured out a way how I want to say it, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And so that's kind of what my Instagram page and my consultation has developed into, is, you know, let me handle it. I'll speak for you. It's okay. Or if you don't want to do it, or if you want to do it, but you don't know what to say, let's figure out what words you want to use to express what you're feeling. So yeah.
Yeah. You're incredibly generous with all of your knowledge and your lessons on social media. That's for sure.
Well, thanks.
How did that all start for you?
I don't even know. That was a slow, weird process. I mean, it's what it started as was just pictures of my kids when they were babies. And then it morphed into sharing about my journey as a surrogate mother for two different families. And then that morphed into sharing my experiences as a journalist. And then I think people kind of recognized me from various journalism stuff that I did for powwows.com. And came to my page, and then I realized that not only were my articles a platform for education, but people were listening on Instagram too. And then when Instagram started doing stories, because they didn't always have stories, as it was just posts, mm-hmm. but Instagram started doing stories, and there was there's a page called How to Not Travel Like a Basic B-word. I don't know if you're allowed to curse on your show, but how to not travel like a basic bitch. And her name is Dr. Kiona. She's fantastic. She had me do some education articles and used her highlights as like a slideshow. And I was like, this is genius. And so she had my information on her show, on her thing. And I was talking to her about it. And I was like, this is fantastic how you've now utilized your highlights for education. She's like, yeah, girl, get it. Like, do it. I was just like, okay. And I found different indigenous issues that I thought, okay, let's do story time. Story time with Corinne, I called it. And then I would talk about different things in my life. And then I was like, you know, a lot of people are watching this. This is more than I thought. Maybe I'll take this opportunity to teach people. And so then I started doing education. And then COVID hit. And I was working at the time for the Minnesota Indian Women's Sexual Assault Coalition. And it was a federal grant funded position. And it was so stressful because we were still expected to be just totally 100% in terms of like workload, while also surviving a pandemic, while also I was living in Minneapolis at the time, and that's when George Floyd was killed by the police. And then there were all these riots that were happening, and I was just blah. And I needed to step away from my position. And that was a risk for me, because mm-hmm. here was a position that had, you know, in the US we have insurance that we have to pay for, or our work will pay for a portion of our health insurance. Well, walking away from that position would mean no healthcare, no income, nothing. And in the middle of a pandemic, without a place. Yeah. And so then I was like, moved to South Dakota with my boyfriend at the time. And then I was like, you know, I have all this time. And I made these educational series about things that were close to my heart, or that I was learning, or that I was participating in out here. SAGE. Language in the workplace, Lakota culture, things like that. And then I put at the end, and if you would like to gift a thank you for your education, you can donate here. And that sustained me. People were so generous in those lessons that I didn't have to try to find some other source of income, because that was helping to pay bills and feed my family. And then I was able to build from that. So in that struggle, people wanted to support the education. And from that, I established my own consulting business and became my own boss. And
That's amazing.
And it was terrifying. It was terrifying because it I could have failed. And I think that I did it because I kind of just assumed that I would fail. I was like, you know, I'm not afraid of failing. And if I fail, I'll learn something from it. And so I did it. And I got very lucky. And I felt supported. So yeah, I think that's a big part of it too, is I felt supported. I don't know if I would have done it if I had people saying, you're stupid, don't do this. But everyone in my corner was like, get it, girl. So I did it. And yeah, that's kind of how it kind of became what it is. Yeah,
I think you found such a need, which you obviously know. And yeah, I feel like the school systems have absolutely failed us. It's just embarrassing that we don't know the real history of our countries.
That's intentional. That's intentional. Yeah. And I think that's important to address too, is that was a choice, an intentional choice.
Right. That's such a good point.
Yeah. To make sure that what you're taught didn't cause you to hate the country you were being raised in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that makes sense.
I actually just want to say something really quick, because I think our group has some questions, but I just want to speak to that schooling aspect, because mm-hmm. that was something that I directly experienced. I went to like a private Catholic school in Toronto, and our history was like the World Wars, a little bit of Canadian history, but it was through a colonial lens. And right. I think when I was so young, like in grade 7, 8 kind of thing, you don't have that awareness of, oh, there's something missing here, or like, this isn't right. Mm-hmm. Or like, even if there was, I didn't know how to tangibly speak about it. And so like coming out of schooling and going through university, where like my university didn't do land acknowledgements, and I'm not saying that that's reconciliation, because it's not, but they didn't even make that step or mention it. And so I feel angry, because I care so much about it now. And I think that you're so gracious, and it's so beautiful that you're willing to educate and you're willing to speak about the trauma that, you know, so many Indigenous communities have faced, but it's also a big burden on you too. And like, why do you have to why do you have to do that? And so sometimes I'm like, well, I don't even know where to start. Like, what can I do? Because this is obviously like a clear gap in the education system, which is only like one place to start. But if I could pick somewhere, I think that that would be really important. And I think for maybe like a lot of youth, do you have any like suggestions for that? Like maybe writing to your school, or being able to like send emails, or I'm just kind of wondering, like, where is that tangible step? Because I would definitely like to take that, because I am like angered that I wasn't given that educational piece when I was growing up.
Yeah, that's a good question. And I think that it's important to remember that it's okay that it's not fixable on a large scale right now for youth. It's okay and appropriate that the steps you're taking now are small, and don't feel like big change, okay? Don't put pressure on yourself to create large change yet. I think that, when I think about what I'm doing and how it started and how many years it took to be reaching the audiences that I'm reaching right now in my 30s, you know, you are way ahead of me. At your age, you're still far, far ahead of where I was. So the baby steps are just as important as the large steps. Let me be clear with that. The same with how a child will develop. If you go straight from being a baby on your back to running, you're missing a very essential developmental phase. Crawling is extremely important in the development of a brain. Doesn't feel like it. It feels like, you know, when you're a mom and you're watching your child, you're just like, oh my gosh, will he ever walk? But that crawling phase is so important. And so for youth who are involved, it's almost it's almost a balance, right, between doing too much or expecting too much of yourself, I should say. There's no such thing as doing too much, only in that what will it do to your own self and your draining, right? And I think a tangible step absolutely is talking about it, even if it's to your friends. Speaking about it in your circles, in your classes, to your teachers. It doesn't even need to be your school principal. It doesn't even need to be that big. It's okay that it's something that local. Even if it's your families, even if it's your church communities, all of those things are change. All of those things are important and impactful. So the education that you're gaining, it's very important to be listening, especially in the beginning. Listening and being just quiet with that information to yourself is super important. And I started there too. That's something I start when I was relearning my culture and gaining that understanding. There's a lot of listening and not very much speaking or action, because I needed to learn and understand from those who are already talking before I felt confident enough to do something on my own. Does that answer your question?
Okay. Yeah, that was great. Thanks. I think actually Jackie has a follow-up on this. She's very eager, so I'll give her the floor.
Yes, I honestly just want to thank you so much for saying that, Corinne. Like, we talk about this a lot on this podcast, and I'm totally a broken record where I'm just constantly saying, especially in the environmental movement, like, it's about progress and not perfection. And I think you really hit the nail on the head in that as young people, we have so much access to all this information, and we just feel so desperate to do something about it. Mm-hmm. And I think it like really weighs on us. I know it weighs on me personally. And so I just want to thank you for kind of giving me that reminder to take a step back and think about the things that I'm learning and not push forward too much, like losing mm-hmm. that time to reflect. And my question was actually going to be like, I think you spoke a lot about how we can participate in land acknowledgements kind of as corporations or committees or groups. And I guess I'm curious like how I can reestablish that relationship as an individual. And I think you kind of touched on that just now by just like reflecting and unlearning and relearning that I am on stolen land and acknowledging that for myself. And yeah. I guess, besides my like deep heartfelt thank you for saying that, I'm curious if you have any other tips about what I can do as an individual.
I think that especially for youths who want to be involved in activism or in education, it is so also equally important to gain an understanding and a practice for self-care. Because if you don't learn what your body and your soul needs at an early age, it will be even more difficult to step into that difficult work, that hard work, and become completely drained. And I will tell you right now, your auntie, me, I deal with this all the time. This is something that I struggle with, learning when to step back. So don't think that I'm telling you to do this because I'm perfect either. You know, I struggle with this too. I will push myself and push myself until I'm damn near empty. And then what else could I give at that point? And then my community hurts because I have to totally, you know, hermit myself away to try to reclaim some of that energy back. So I think I'm getting better at it. But I would say equally as important as activism in youth is learning that self-care is not selfish. It's necessary. And self-care will look different for everybody. You can't just Google, how do I self-care, and read the top 10 self-care tips on some Google article. You know, it's going to be different for Brynna. It's going to be different for Jessica. What fills your cup, whether that's, disconnecting from social media for a while and setting boundaries for, okay, I'm going to support Black History Month on this day and on this day, but it's also okay for me to support my own needs and my own loves on my social media pages for these other days. That's okay. Don't feel like you're not doing enough, because doing something is something. And taking care of yourself early on in the work will give you longevity in terms of what you can give later down the road and into those passions that are starting to fuel your fire now. Self-care is a big one.
That's beautiful. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Hi, Corinne. Thank you so much. I am so overjoyed to have you on our podcast today. And thanks so much for everything that you've said. I've really resonated with a lot of it, especially in regard to when you talk about a process of remembering and sitting and listening with this information. That's something that I really picked up on when I read Braiding Sweetgrass for the first time. And so I really appreciate you saying that and kind of reiterating that information for me. My question is a little bit more simple. I'm just wondering if you would have any book recommendations in regard to information that we can read on how to best practice reconciliation and connection.
Braiding Sweetgrass is going to be one of them. I have that by my bed right now, actually. You mentioned that I started reading that recently, and I have been loving it. There's another book that I really recommend everyone read, whether you are in trauma work or not, or just the fact that you're going to be stepping in, maybe interacting with Indigenous communities. It's important to understand what comes with people who have intergenerational trauma. There's a book called Decolonizing Trauma Work. It's very good. Also, Indigenous Masculinity, Understanding Indigenous Masculinity. Oh, I think that's what it's called. Let me see. I have it right here in my little library. Well, said that. I don't. it's in my living room. But that was one of the books that I used when I was starting my nonprofit organization called Buffalo Project, which works with men on learning how to be healthy, emotionally healthy men as a way of reducing human trafficking and violence against women. So I would definitely recommend that. And actually, the TikTok user Notorious Cree, he's the cover image on that when he was much younger. That's just
a little tidbit
of information. Yeah. In fact, because he messaged me a while ago, and I was like, because I posted about the book, and he's like, oh, gee, that's me. And I was like, what? Oh my gosh. Yeah. I'm trying to think of what other one I would recommend. Oh, there's a book called If You've Forgotten the Name of the Clouds, You've Lost Your Way. And it's by Russell Means, who is a very well-known activist, and he's Oglala Lakota. Others know him as an actor also. He did the voice of Pocahontas' father in the Disney movie Pocahontas. But he wrote that book, If You've Forgotten the Name of the Clouds, You've Lost Your Way. Also, Where White Men Fear to Tread is another book that he wrote that's really good. And these are books that are not for the weak-hearted. You have to be ready to do some self-reflection. He's going to be pretty straightforward in a lot of these books. And I think that that's good. And I learned a lot from reading them as well. And they were some of the books that I started reading when I was new to my journey in being proud of who I was.
Thank you. Yeah. That was really helpful.
You're welcome.
I think that deep self-reflection is definitely needed right now. And I'm so excited to read those.
They're good ones.
We've been typing them in our group chat so that nobody forgets any of them. And I've been scribbling them down in my notebook. I don't know if anybody else has a question, but if you do, just leave an asterisk in the chat. I just wanted to quickly ask you, also, like, so much gratitude for you being here today. I've just been like staring at you the whole time. I hope that's not creepy, but I'm just like, oh my gosh, this is the best thing ever. We actually have quite quite a range of like individuals that listen to our podcast. So we have a lot of youth, but then we also have some older individuals too. And I know that we kind of touched on it, like there is kind of a disconnect in terms of access to information and language, and even just talking to your own communities about reconciliation and Indigenous sovereignty. And I think language is a key piece of information that is missing, specifically like what words to use and maybe like language that you shouldn't be using that's not respectful. And I think it's just an awareness piece. So I was just wondering, like, before we wrap up and before anyone else has like any other questions, do you have any advice on that as to like language that should and shouldn't be used?
Yeah, I do. And I think the abridged version of that very long discussion that we could have on it is to, even if you don't understand why the next words that I'm going to say are offensive, even if you don't understand the why, what you can understand is that they are hurting someone. And we as humans don't want to hurt someone. And so even if I don't understand why, I love you enough that I'm not going to hurt you anymore, right? That should be the base understanding with anything new before we even can understand the why. It's imperative to at least just be human in that. So that being said, things like calling your business meeting a powwow, that's not okay to do. Calling your friend group your tribe, that's not okay to do. Saying that some, instead of calling some, well, it's not nice to call someone crazy anyway, but to say, he's off the reservation. That's a phrase that I've heard to refer to someone as being crazy. None of these are okay to say. And the very basic understanding of why they're not okay to say is because things like powwows were created in order to save and hold on to and to grasp a culture that was being ripped from us. And so to make light of that word is disrespectful. To call your friends your tribe when there are literally people being killed for being part of one is disrespectful. It's privilege. And so there's, with that understanding, it's appropriative. Okay, so it's culturally appropriative when you use it. And my definition for cultural appropriation is, cultural appropriation is when you use a word, or if you put on a piece of clothing or cultural practice with little to no understanding of what it is, and without fear of threat of danger to the one wearing it, right? So you could be if a non-oppressed race puts on the cultural wear of another oppressed race with little to no understanding of its meaning and without fear of danger to their life, that's privilege and it's appropriation. Here's a real world example, okay? I went to a march for a climate change march, and there was a woman who showed up wearing a headdress, right? And some people say, women don't wear headdresses. Well, that's not true, because the Crow Nation have women who wear headdresses. But it is absolutely disrespectful, because those women who do wear those headdresses, or these people who have war bonnets, have done significant community things or given of their lives to their people or community and have been awarded that as an honor. It's something some people will never see in their lifetime in terms of an honor. And she wore it because she wanted to be cool, and she thought it would bring attention to herself. And some people are just like that. And she got away with it. She even had police show up to protect her from the Indigenous women who were coming up to her to lecture her about why it was not okay. But she was protected to do that. On the flip side, my fiance, Greg Greycloud, wore his wapegnaka, his feathers, to the Senate when they voted against the KXL pipeline in 2014, and he sang in the hallway of the Senate, not even in the Senate building, sang because he was grateful that they were voting against the KXL pipeline. He was honoring them with his songs. wearing his feathers, he drew attention to himself in those ways, was arrested, even though he had a pass that allowed him to be there. Greg was arrested for doing that. Years later, they dropped the charges or whatever. But still, the point was, this woman showed up to a function because she wanted to draw attention to herself in feathers. That's privilege. She was protected by the police even. Greg showed up because he wanted to honor the people for voting against a pipeline that would destroy his people and homelands in numerous ways, and he was literally arrested for rejoicing that they were voting against it. And that's like just one of many differences that I could point out. So, I mean, people think words are, oh, I could use that word, no problem. It's just a word. It's just a word. But being flippant with it and using it in a way that takes away from the respect and the honor and the history of that is privilege. It's appropriation.
100%. And those things happen every day. That's one example, but that's the everyday reality. And I think that ties well to what we were saying at the beginning, where treating sovereign nations respectfully with your language, the opposite is true too. You're just conditioning yourself that those things are okay. Yeah. I'm really glad you brought that up. Thank you so much for being here and being our very honored first guest.
You're welcome.
For our listeners that maybe want to stay up to date with your work or to stay in touch, what's the best way to do that?
Probably Instagram or my consulting website. So my Instagram handle is MissCorinne86. And my consulting website is www.corinnericeconsulting.com.
Amazing. We'll definitely link that in the show notes.
Awesome.
Thank you so much, Corinne.
Yeah, thank you for having me. Have a good night.
You too. Stay safe.
Yeah, wasn't that just incredible? Hopefully this was helpful for everyone to learn a bit more about land acknowledgements and reconciliation in general. Today, for your 10-minute action to create change, we are asking you to take 10 minutes to download the Native Land app to learn about whose land you live and play on. Don't forget to check out this episode's show notes for more information and all resources mentioned in our discussion. More examples of 10-minute actions you can take are included as well, in case you were particularly inspired by this week's episode, as I was. Please follow us on Spotify and Apple Podcasts and review us to let us know what you think. We're also on Instagram at 10 Minutes to Change Podcast. Thank you so much for listening, and we'll see you soon.